and welcome to How Curious. I'm Rachel Hopkin. I'm just arriving at a handsome Tudor Revival brick house on the corner of Oklahoma City's Northeast Grand Boulevard and 16th Street.
Looks like you're going to be camping.
I didn't bring everything.
This place is called the Edwards House, and it was built in the early 1940s.
We're right in the area that they developed.
Yes, all of these homes that you can see were built by them.
My name is James Johnson, and I am a native Oklahoma Cityan. My grandparents were Walter and Frances Edwards. They were the developers of Edwards addition that we are sitting in now.
The Edwards addition was the first African-American housing development in Oklahoma City, and this was where the couple behind it lived. Their story begins with James's grandfather, Walter Edwards. Walter was still a child when his family migrated to Oklahoma from Mississippi in the early 1900s.
The impetus for moving was a better life. And at the time that they moved to Oklahoma, it was a promised land that, you know, you come and work hard and do all the things that others do, and you could do that successfully.
And Walter pretty much embodied that American dream spirit.
One man's trash might be another man's trash.
We're hearing the opening scene of a play about the Edwards by writer and director Dwee Williams and the Rhythmically Speaking Theatre Company. Mr. Edwards, portrayed by Albert Bostick, is picking up discarded scraps of metal.
And you see stuff like this lying around all the time. Most folk won't even bother to pick it up. But I will, because I know the value of scraps.
The scrap metal business was how Mr. Edwards got started, but he wasn't one to rest on his laurels. Eugene Jones grew up in the Edwards addition.
He established a baggage company. He had a carpet business, an iron foundry, two drive-in service stations or filling stations, a taxi line, an auto repair shop, two pharmacies.
I'm feeling tired just thinking about all of those things.
A lot.
It's important to stress, though, that Walter didn't do this all by himself. His wife, Frances, was equally crucial.
They were like hand in glove in terms of a partnership. It could not have existed without either party.
Do you know how they met?
My grandmother became a bookkeeper for my grandfather. And that relationship then grew into a marriage.
So romance blossomed over the accounting sheets.
Exactly.
We heard James mention earlier that Oklahoma had once been perceived as a kind of promised land, and for a time, black communities thrived throughout the state. But that expansive sense of optimism didn't last all that long.
Racial segregation reared its head, and there was only a certain amount of space that African Americans could live in Oklahoma City. And the population of African Americans were growing, and, you know, they were busting at the seams. So my grandparents said, well, we need new housing. Well, where can we get new housing? We can get it in places that are undeveloped now. This area at the time in the 30s was out in the boondocks.
The land that the Edwards had their eye on was a 33-acre tract on the east side of Grand Boulevard. It was then owned by a white gentleman named C.T. Hassman.
Edwards knew that he would not be able to go through the process of getting the land zoned, platted, etc., for building houses because of the ethnic bias.
Author and academic Dr. Paul Lehman also grew up in an Edwards home.
So he agreed with Hassman that he would purchase the land if Hassman would go through the process and get the land platted, etc.
He sounds very canny and also very persuasive.
Well, he and his wife, they understood the society they were living in, and they understood how to navigate their course in that society.
And they demonstrated the ability to do that time after time, including in their dealings with the Federal Housing Administration, or FHA. The FHA had been established in the early 1930s to support a housing industry hard hit by the Depression. However, by the time the Edwards approached them towards the end of the same decade, the administration had as yet only approved loans for exclusively white occupancy developments. The Edwards were determined to change this, even in the face of blatant bigotry. In this scene from Dwee Williams' play about the Edwards, Trina Brown plays the role of Frances.
The FHA director in Oklahoma City said, "Why, Negroes will never work hard enough or be willing to save enough of what they do earn to buy a house. I know, because I have them working for me." He doesn't know what he's talking about. You have to give people a chance.
Mrs. Edwards went to Washington to the FHA office and complained. So they called the Oklahoma City office and asked, "What's the problem here?" And then, of course, they tried to make excuses, et cetera, but eventually the loan was approved and they became the first African Americans to receive an FHA loan for building homes,
thereby blazing a trail for future developers of color. The challenges continued. Here's Trina Brown as Frances Edwards again.
"For one thing, there were not enough skilled Negro construction workers to finish the project. But my WJ, he hired a very nice white foreman named Mr. Payne, and he helped train Negroes to be carpenters, plumbers, electricians, and bricklayers, and everything else that we needed to finish the project. And the colors and whites worked side by side with no problem. We built close to 800 homes with mortgages of $16 to $24 a month, and no one defaulted."
All of this was taking place from the late 1930s and continued through to the 50s, after the Edwards purchased a second land tract north of their original addition and which straddled Grand Boulevard. I asked Dr. Lehman, what was the aim of the Edwards in undertaking all of this?
To build a community where African Americans could enjoy the benefits of American society. They donated land for a school. They donated land for a park. They built a hospital. There was a shopping center. There was pretty much everything you would want in a community. And since it was an African-American community, it put a lie to the stereotypical concepts of African-Americans being lazy and ignorant or not having vision to want to excel and advance financially.
The house was in a very nice neighborhood.
Eugene Jones' parents bought an Edwards home in 1950 when he was around 5.
All of the homes were brick. I remember having lots of friends. It was totally safe back in those days. Our mothers could leave the house totally unlocked, be gone for a number of hours, and come back. Everything was still there. And the only thing I hated about there was that my mother made me wear galoshes or rubber boots in the rain.
Some of the roads were still unpaved back then.
It was hard for me to get my raincoat off and my little rubber boots, which fit so tightly on my shoes. I remember that.
Eugene attended the Edwards School from kindergarten on.
We had some of the best teachers, period, anywhere. We had kids who became national scholars. We had kids who went to Harvard and Yale. We could compete with anybody. I didn't even know for a long time that there was anything such as prejudice in the world because we lived in our cocoon of a community. I didn't know about things like that until many, many years later. It was just such a wonderful place, just a wonderful, beautiful place.
But of course, prejudice did exist. And even though by the 1940s, Mr. and Mrs. Edwards were two of the richest African Americans in the land, their wealth could not entirely protect them from it in a state that was still segregated in many ways. This became all too clear when Frances fell gravely ill.
My grandmother was in the hospital here in Oklahoma City, relegated to a basement ward because of her ethnicity. The doctors came to my grandfather and said, "Mr. Edwards, if your wife is to get better, she needs to be in a facility where she can get better treatment than we are able to offer to her." Luckily, he had the means to take her to the Mayo Clinic, where she was admitted, where she was diagnosed, where she was treated, where she got better. And it was on her hospital bed there that they decided together, we are going to build a hospital, not only for African Americans, but for any who have a need for our care.
these are the plans. We're going to have 105 beds with private rooms. We're going to have two operating rooms, and we'll have x-ray and physical therapy, and we'll have a lab, and we're going to have eye, ears, nose, and throat clinic. And, of course, we have to deliver the baby, so there's a delivery there, and we'll put the nursery for them there, and then we got to take care of the children, so we'll have a pediatric ward, and, of course, we'll have general examination rooms.
You know, this is going to be a fine hospital for the Northeast community, but you left something out.
What?
The room where you're going to boss all these people around.
WJ.
The Edwards Memorial Hospital opened in 1948. It was the first black-owned and operated such facility in the Southwest, and it was located directly across Grand Boulevard from the Edwards home. Grand Boulevard had originally been designed to loop around Oklahoma City and provide easy access to parks and greenery. Part of the Edwards addition straddled it, and those who lived in the houses directly adjacent, including the Edwards themselves, were blessed with pleasant views of this broad meridian.
Out here is the front porch.
We're back at the Edwards house with James Johnson.
Early on, when the house was originally built, these arches were just open, but as time went on, they closed some of them down, put blinders on.
I think many of us would want to close in our porches if we suddenly found ourselves living next to a six-lane highway. Just a few years after the Edwards Hospital opened, the building of I-35 began, and its route went right through the Edwards development. Alas, this was a pattern which played out in communities of colour across the nation time and again, not least in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's now hard to see where the Edwards additions begin or end, or even that they exist at all. They're on the National Register of Historic Places, as is the Edwards' own home. Even so, given all that this couple achieved, their significance feels somewhat unmarked. Here's Dr. Lehman again.
I've always felt that the Edwards have never really been given the recognition for what they were able to accomplish, not for themselves, but for the African-American community and the Oklahoma City community. Can you imagine 800 houses that needed to be insured? Lawnmowers, furniture, appliances, utilities, taxes. Who does that benefit? Not the African-American community per se, but Oklahoma City. And so I think that their influence is very underrated.
For their grandson, James Johnson, it is the Edwards intangible legacy that stands out.
What is it that we learn? We learn that more is done by collaboration and cooperation than in isolation. And though my grandparents were African Americans, they became more successful by cooperating with folks that didn't look like them. And they sought to bring about a better life and living for their community. Maybe I'm a little too close to best understand, but others would tell you that having bought my house here, having raised my family here, it was a good environment that propelled us and them in ways that it wouldn't have without.
James Johnson, the grandson of Francis and Walter Edwards. As always, I want to thank all of the contributors to this episode, and a huge shout out to the Rhythmically Speaking Theatre Company and Dwee Williams for allowing me to use excerpts from their production of W.J. Edwards, Oklahoma's Scrap Metal Entrepreneur, with Albert Bostick and Trina Brown as Mr. and Mrs. Edwards. Their performances took place against a wonderfully evocative backdrop created by Joyce Jackson, which you can see on our webpage, along with full play production credits. You'll also find many photos of the Edwards and their works. Just look for KGOU and How Curious. Thanks also to Thais Dempsey, Herlan Dempsey, Marsha Heron, Matthew Pierce, Vanessa Morrison, and Deborah Richards. How Curious is a KGOU public radio production. The managing editor is Logan Layden. David Gray composed our theme music, and I'm Rachel Hopkin. And of course, we hope you already know that if you have an Oklahoma-related question or idea for a future episode, we'd love to hear about it. You can reach us at curious@kgou.org.
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.